Good morning, I'm Veronica Rickard, keeping you company this morning on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. This hour, we explore the joys of solo travel, especially for women. And traveling alone can be daunting in terms of safety alone, but our guest this morning says nothing should stop you from seeing the world, even if you have to go it alone. In fact, it can be better that way. Carolyn Jeanette is co-owner of the travel company Inroads Ireland Tours. She's traveled to 31 countries, 16 of them by herself, and she's visited 5 of 7 continents. And we're interested to hear what you think this morning. Have you ever traveled alone, and did it change you? Do you think it's something you just need to do to grow as a person, to travel alone? And what's stopping you if you haven't done it? Our number is 1-800-642-1234. That's 1-800-642-1234, and our email is talk@wpr.org, and you can also chime in on our Facebook page at The Veronica Rickard Show. And Carolyn Jeanette, thanks so much for joining us today.
Oh, great, Veronica. It's great to be here.
Well, you've been to, what, 31 countries, 16 of them by yourself. How do you get started doing something like that? Most of us, we think about traveling alone, especially for women. I'll be honest about that. And it seems a little daunting.
Yeah, I totally understand. It's not like one of those things that suddenly one day I woke up and thought, oh, I'm just going to go travel to Australia by myself. It's really kind of a journey, which is kind of the beauty of travel, is that, you know, one travel experience really leads to another. And it really all kind of started, I think, I went to college at Eau Claire, and I decided I was going to move out to Washington, D.C., after college, and out there I met a lot of people that were interested in traveling abroad, and I had a friend who was doing volunteer work in Costa Rica for the summer and asked me to come down and travel with her when she was done doing that. And when I got down there, actually her plans had changed and she really wasn't available to travel with me at all. They needed her to do more work. So she ended up kind of dropping me off at a hostel in the capital city, and we were able to hang out for a few days here and there, but I ended up pretty much traveling on my own and meeting other people at the hostel, and that really kind of got the ball rolling.
What did it feel like, that first trip by yourself? Were you feeling a little bit scared?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I mean, it's the thing is, it's like that combination of kind of excited, happy energy, and then that little bit of flutter in your stomach as well. And you're like, oh, what's it going to be all about? And, you know, I hadn't really planned on traveling alone or solo for that trip. But once you got there, you realize that, A, there's a lot of other people out there doing this. There's a lot of other travelers, and especially, I have to say, going to hostels is a great way to meet people, and hostels are really for any age group nowadays. I mean, I think back in the day, they had their reputation of being more for, like, you know, 20-year-olds that were finishing college, this and that, but, you know, I'm in my 40s now, and I still stay at hostels every now and then. It's a great way to meet travelers, and if it's that kind of, that fits your travel style for that trip, then you should try it.
I never knew that. So hostels are now for any age group.
Yeah. And, you know, and actually I was going through Sydney, and one thing that was really inspiring to me is meeting other travelers. And then you do meet a lot of people when you're at hostels. And there was a woman who was 70 flying over towards Finland from New Zealand. And she had an overnight in Sydney. So she stayed at a hostel because she wanted to meet other travelers. And I was like, that's so cool. And, you know, I want to be that 70-year-old woman staying in a hostel in Sydney someday.
So, for women traveling alone, one of the things you think about is that feeling of being adrift in a strange place, maybe not being able to keep yourself safe. And that can be something that stops people. What if you wander into a bad neighborhood, something goes wrong, and you're alone, and you've got sometimes that language barrier? What about that scenario?
Yeah, those can be tricky. You know, I have to say, and I've traveled, well, for about, you know, 25 years now. Luckily, I've never gotten into kind of an awkward situation. I think a lot of that has to do about preparation. You know, you do your homework. You talk to the people where you're staying at. Say, hey, I'm thinking about heading out here tonight. You know, or is there any kind of dodgy areas around there or anything I should know? Like, you know, they might say, oh, after 11 o'clock, it's probably not, you should be heading back. But, you know, if one did find themselves in a situation, a lot of things you can do as a traveler is, first of all, to walk with confidence. You know, we're not like all hunched over, like walk like you know where you're going with a purpose, you know, and that right away eliminates you from potential difficulties. If you are having kind of that feeling in your gut or your stomach that, oh, something doesn't feel right, don't panic. You know, keep your confident walk, you know, get to a place where, you know, it's well lit. And another good thing, like in terms of research and doing your homework, I always like to learn key phrases in the local language. So I'll look up, okay, what's their version of help? Now, it may not be an actual translation of the word help, but what is their local colloquialism for help in a language? And so that really helps me as well. And I always like to know the words for like hello, goodbye, and thank you, and some numbers. to really help me in those kinds of situations.
Now, I know that one thing that you sort of pride yourself on is when you go by yourself, you don't do things like watch a movie in your hotel room or drive through Taco Bell. You go to the nice places and you do it on your own. Tell us a little bit about maybe that trip to North Carolina.
Oh, yeah, that's a really good, nice story. So I was living out in Washington, D.C., and I was going out with this guy, and we had gone down to the Outer Banks in North Carolina, which is right along the Atlantic Ocean. It's a beautiful area. But unfortunately, as a couple, we didn't have a very good time together. And so when we broke up, I didn't want to have that to be my memory of the Outer Banks tied to this guy. So I decided I'm going to go down there on my own. I went down there for 3 nights, 4 days, and I was like, I'm going to create my own memory here. So I booked myself into a motel near the beach. And you know, like you said, I didn't want to relegate myself to just like, you know, I think people feel more comfortable if you're dining alone to do it like a fast food place. I was like, I wanted like a really good seafood dinner. So I went out to a beautiful restaurant right on the ocean. And the thing is kind of not, I didn't want to bring a book. I wanted to be very engaged in my environment. So I had actually read a book about traveling solo. And they said, one thing that you can do is actually, you know, to go through your five senses. What are you hearing? What are you smelling? What are you tasting? And just kind of take, you kind of have a more richer environment. And suddenly, you know, my beverage was arriving. My salad was there. My dinner was there. And I had a great, great time. And a second time I went out, I really was in the mood for pizza. You know, I love pizza, I have to say. And the person where I was staying recommended this place down the road. I get there, it's like an hour wait for a table. It's more of a bustling, kind of busy place. But there's a place at the bar. So I'm like, well, I'll just sit at the bar on my own. And, you know, people at bars are usually pretty gregarious and chatty folks. So I ended up having my dinner at the bar. And I was, like, friends with, like, 10 new people down the whole bar by the end of the night. And it was great. It was really fun. And all these things are really kind of like, there's, like, one more step you're taking in terms of, like, I feel like me growing as a person, feeling more confident, feeling like I can do that. I can walk into that place on my own and feel confident in what I'm doing here.
Do you think that when you travel with someone else, either maybe a family group or even just a significant other, does that in any way sort of insulate you from really experiencing the place that you're in?
Yeah. You know, there's ups and downs to, you know, different travel styles. I mean, there's traveling solo isn't all, you know, glorious as well. But you're right. And traveling with a significant other or with a family group, you know, you have your support system already in place. And so you may not be as open to potentially new experiences versus like traveling alone. Like I was on a train coming across Australia from the west coast of Perth to the middle part in Adelaide. And I was alone on my trip. And so they're like this holiday car and I'm meeting everybody. Because I was like, hey, why is this American girl traveling alone across Australia? They don't see that very often, you know? And I wasn't doing it just for like a couple weeks. I was doing it for 3 months. So they're just like, wow, tell us your story. So I think I may not have met as many people if I was with someone else, you know? So yeah, they can insulate you a little bit by traveling with someone.
Well, I know another place that you went on your own was Costa Rica, and maybe that was one that hadn't started out as a solo trip, but it became a solo trip, and some pretty extraordinary things happened to you while you were there, right?
Yeah, it was kind of a weird set of circumstances. So my friend, as I mentioned before, she had gotten busy, so I was down in the capital city. I really wanted to go out into the jungle and, like, you know, kind of do that whole jungle Costa Rica experience. So I booked just, like, a little 3-day trip on my own. They fly out there, like, in a 4-seater plane to the Caribbean side of the coast. And also on my plane, I met two other female travelers. One was a lawyer from New Jersey, and the other was a physician originally from Africa. So, you know, they have us fill out a little, like, info card about ourselves. And we get out to this nice little resort along the beach. And I'm just, you know, we're going to go off in the boat and do the jungle tour. Everything's great. I'm sitting in a hammock reading a book, and this man from the lodge comes and says, we see that you're a nurse. A Costa Rican farmer, has just walked in 2 hours from his farm fields. He was bitten by a poisonous snake, and we think he's going to die. Can you help us? We have a first aid kit here, but no one knows how to administer shots. So they had also gotten McKenna, who was the physician that I had met on the plane out. So we come and look at the guy, and the thing about the snake bite is what they call a neurotoxin, so it kind of stops your breathing muscles from working. So the trick is to administer this antivenom to block the neurotoxin. And in their first aid kit, they're meant to have like kind of 2 big doses of this, and they only had one. And so McKenna's like, Carolyn, you need to go and give the shots. Doctors don't do that. That's what nurses do. So I learned you administer shots on the same side as a snake bite, and it was four separate injections. And he was a real scrawny, smaller kind of Costa Rican farmer. And then we had to wait about 4 hours for a helicopter to come out from the capital city with paramedics. And all we could do to monitor him around that time was just basically feel his pulse on his neck, and that's it. Hmm. We had no, like, IV fluids, no heart monitoring equipment, nothing.
But he made it 2 hours in.
Yeah, he had walked for 2 hours, and he actually had carried the snake with him.
Ugh.
It was a really small snake, but very colorful, which is always kind of a key thing. It's usually the more colorful the snake, the more poisonous can be.
Hmm.
So yes, happily to say we saved his
life.
He made it, and we took a photo with him.
I guess that could have happened if you were with someone else, too. But I mean, if you hadn't taken that trip by yourself, maybe that farmer would not be alive now. It's kind of interesting to just...
Yeah, you just don't know. And I think if we had set kind of our travel plans, I don't think that I would have gone out on this jungle excursion on my own. You know, so it's just amazing the world of opportunities that opens up to you when you're just open to it.
Well, one thing I like about your philosophy is that you shouldn't let other people dictate your travel route. In other words, if you don't have friends who don't want to hike Machu Picchu, that doesn't mean you shouldn't go. It means you should still go. And I think a lot of us would sort of shelve that idea if we couldn't find anyone who had the time or the interest or the money until another time. But you're saying just get out there now.
Yeah, because I found that, like, particularly in my later 20s, that exactly what you just said, you know, I wanted to go to certain places, and people, you know, were getting married or having kids or just didn't have the time or the interest or the desire or whatever. And so two things happened in my later 20s that I thought were really great experiences. One, I always wanted to go rafting through the Colorado River in the Grand Canyon. I thought that'd be awesome. So, you know, again, this kind of idea that it's not like magically one day it's that I'm going to be a solo traveler. But part of this kind of journey to becoming a more independent traveler was that I booked my own air. I flew out to Vegas. I stayed a couple days there on my own. But then I joined up with a tour group that was doing the rafting trip. So in this tour group, there are actually 4 solo travelers and 4 couples. So it's a kind of nice mixture of people. And we hung out for 5 days and we rafted the Colorado River. And then we all parted our ways. But then the second example was that I really wanted to go to Greece. I just was really just fascinated by Greece, the sort of, you know, philosophy and architecture. And again, people didn't want to go. So I flew myself. This was after the Grand Canyon one. I had felt more confident after that. And so I flew to London to Athens, where again, I joined up with a group. And then I came back and we did like 2 weeks traveling around. But then I flew back to London on my own and did London for like 5 days on my own. And it's this amazing feeling. I remember coming up on the subway and hearing this song, Bittersweet Symphony by The Verve, and just thinking, like, this is awesome. I'm in London on my own, and I can do this. It's great.
Well, I should point out, too, that something very important happened on one of your solo travels. You met your husband, right?
I did. And, you know, it's another important thing about traveling solo is to listen to your gut. You know, like you said, if you're walking down the street, something doesn't feel right, you know, change your plans. Well, I was traveling for 4 months in Europe, and I was down in Nice, France, and I was contemplating going to Rome. And I had already been to Florence and Venice, and for some reason, going to Rome just wasn't just quite sitting right with me. I just had heard about Italian men, and I don't know, it just didn't feel right. So I was talking to my sister, who was traveling with me for a couple weeks at that time, and she's like, so just don't go. I was like, oh, you're not stuck to your itinerary. You don't have to do that. So I decided to go to Ireland instead, and then I ended up, and I booked a backpackers tour in London to go to Ireland. And because I was just, it can get tiring organizing your own travel. So it's kind of good to know your own travel meter and say, you know, I'm going to take a break and let, you know, do a little tour or something and let someone else do the thinking for me for a couple weeks. And yes, I met a lovely tour guide by the name of Phil, and he's now my husband. And now we run a travel company. So it really comes full circle, doesn't it?
It does. That's a great story. Speaking of taking tours, that's one of your coping mechanisms for traveling alone. And maybe is this a good way to get your feet wet if you want to try solo travel? Just join a tour, maybe for the first time. That's a good way to start instead of launching into doing something that requires all the travel on your own.
Yeah, because like organizing just like one part of it on your own can be enough to take on at once. Like for me, like organizing my travel and finding that tour company to do the Colorado River with, that was enough work for what I wanted at that time. I didn't want to do the whole thing, you know? So yeah, it's a nice way to kind of blend into it. And then still now, you know, occasionally I'll do like tours. Occasionally I'll travel on my own. Occasionally, you know, Phil and I obviously travel a lot together. So it is kind of a nice way to kind of slide into it. And then your travel confidence grows and you realize are a lot of solo travelers out there. And there's a whole like subculture going on that it's really easy to just kind of get involved with.
We're talking this hour about the joys of solo travel, how to do it on your own if you haven't before, and techniques for hitting the road by yourself. Carolyn Jeanette is co-owner of the travel company Inroads Ireland. She's traveled to 31 countries, 16 of them by herself. And we're looking forward to taking your phone call this morning. Have you had a rewarding solo travel experience? And maybe you had to jump over a hurdle to get to that experience, but did it change you? How is it different when you travel by yourself? And would you do it again? Our number is 1-800-642-1234. It's 1-800-642-1234. And you can email us at talk@wpr.org. I'm Veronica Rickert, and this is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Veronica Rickert back with you on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio as we talk with Carolyn Jeanette, who is co-owner of Inroads Ireland Tours. We're talking about the joys and the risks of solo travel. And we have full phone lines here. We're having a couple technical problems with the headphones, so hopefully we'll get that sorted out when Carolyn can hear through her headphones. She can hear me because she's in the studio. But we'll be working on that. Carolyn, you have some tips for getting started until we get the phones working. How do you, besides taking a tour, what else would you suggest?
Some things that I did to kind of, important concept is to being comfortable in your own company. So there's lots of ways that you can kind of get better at that. You know, being comfortable with being with yourself. So one thing that I actually did was that I went out to dinner and I went to a show in my hometown on my own. And again, I didn't like bring a book. Don't bring your phone. You know, don't distract yourself. Kind of do that sensory experience where you really just, you know, sit tall and be proud and, you know, like, see, what am I, you know, looking at? What am I smelling? What am I tasting? What am I hearing? You know, and just kind of take in the whole environment. Just be quiet. You know, where we have so much busyness in all of our everyday lives that it's nice just to kind of be quiet and just kind of take in the full kind of sensory experience. The next thing that I kind of did was that, living out in Washington, D.C., and even like here in Madison, or if you live in Milwaukee or anywhere in Wisconsin, there's lots of like little like day trips that you can do on your own and spend an overnight somewhere, but do this with yourself. You know, so I actually had driven like from D.C. up to Gettysburg, Pennsylvania, and I spent a couple nights up there and then I drove back. And I stopped along the way and I went like, to a diner for breakfast. And it's just really fun. It's like you kind of have that feeling of the open road. It's really great. And then from there, you know, you could maybe one thing kind of, you know, builds upon another. So maybe then next, you know, fly or drive and try staying somewhere for 3 or 5 nights. So you kind of build up your confidence over time.
So sort of start slowly and go from there. Now, in terms of overnight travel, is that something that you suggest maybe kind of waiting with until you've tried maybe one of these tours first? And it looks like we have headphones. Okay, great. And, well, so what about the overnight trips? What do you suggest? Someplace local, maybe a quick drive? Or do you think, you know, just dive in and go somewhere a little farther away?
I think it just really depends on what feels good to you, you know? If it feels like just, you know, driving up to, say, like, Door County from here, or just going over to Milwaukee or something like that, if that feels good, do it. But if you want to try something a little bit farther, you know, try that, too. It's like, I think I did like, a lot of, like, little day trips in and out of D.C., and then that Outer Banks one down to North Carolina was probably my first bigger one, you know, like, you know, 4 nights or so. And it was kind of scary, I'm going to be honest, you know, I was like, what's going to this all be about? But then once you start doing it, you're just like, oh, this is really, really cool. I can do this, you know, it's great.
Well, we do a full phone line, so let's get our callers in on this. We have Kathy joining us first from Oshkosh. Hi, Kathy.
Hi.
Hey, go ahead.
I have to relate my first story that I traveled by myself out of town. I had a trip planned to South Carolina, to Charleston, and a friend of mine was going with me. And at the last minute, she decided she couldn't go or didn't want to go. And I had all my hotel reservations set and everything, and I really wanted to go. And I have a dog, well, I had at that time a sheepdog. And she was going along also. So I thought, well, I will go by myself. Well, I cried my eyes out from Oshkosh to Chicago because I was alone and nobody would go with me on this trip. And I thought, a number of times I thought, turn around, go back home. And then I thought, no, go ahead. you're only going from city to city. You aren't going from Oshkosh to Charleston. There's all these cities along the way. Just take it all in short trips instead of one big long trip. And ever since that trip, I have gone down to Charleston myself numerous times, sometimes twice a year. And I love traveling by myself. But then it got where my family knew where I was going, and they started going there, too. And it wasn't as much fun when they came along, even though we took separate cars and everything, you know, and we all met down there. And I just had more fun by myself. Eating out alone was no bother to me. Even here in Oshkosh, I eat alone. Mm. And like you said, you look around and you enjoy what's around you, and I really enjoy traveling alone. I've never traveled out of the country alone because I have a dog, and you can't take them too far. But I've never encountered any real problems. I've always felt that know your surroundings and don't do anything that isn't right. You know, don't put yourself in harm's way.
Well, thank you for that story, Kathy. I appreciate it. And there's an example of someone who was a little bit frightened and sad to be going off by herself, and she enjoys traveling alone more now.
Yeah, it's almost kind of like that idea of like what you think you might have lemon, you make lemonades, you know? Like, you just, and that's the thing about traveling is that it's, I think no matter whether you're traveling alone or traveling with others, there are things going to come up that might put a little dent into your travel plans. But it's kind of like, it's also like kind of like a personal empowerment kind of thing. Like, how do you deal with those, you know, dilemmas? How do you cope with those? And they're actually good kind of life building skills, because I have to say, I've gone like on job interviews, and being a good traveler is really good for being like a good problem solver, being an independent thinker, looking at systems, how things work together. So it's good life skills as well.
All right. Well, thank you so much, Kathy. And we'll go to our next caller, Barbara, joining us from Superior. Hi, Barbara.
Oh, hello. Thank you. I have a wanderlust. I've had that since I was a child. But I find if one has at least a working knowledge of another language, it's important. And I always believe to reach out to people. I have traveled on my own. I travel with a very easy luggage, scuba diving luggage, where one can roll it or put it over one shoulder, and a backpack. I was in the tube in England, coming out of Gatwick and going up to Scotland, and I found that the men in at least in London are very helpful. They would help me with my luggage, and I just believe in reaching out to people, and it's amazing how you can meet friends, and just be careful. It's a wonderful world out there. Thank you.
All right. Thank you so much for that thought. Carolyn?
Yeah, it's interesting that she mentioned London and the subway, because I had a similar experience. In my early days of travel, I wasn't quite so good at the knowing how to pack less. I had this giant suitcase that was just, it was only for a 2-week trip, and it was, I don't know, probably weighed 60 pounds. It was just giant. And I came into London, I was on the subway, and this thing was almost like twice, almost as big as me almost. It was just a giant suitcase. And there's no escalator. So I'm thinking, okay, I'm just have to kind of kunk, you know, take this thing up one at a time. And this guy just like, that's a big bag for a small girl. Let me help you out with that. And he literally just carried it up the steps for me.
So I suppose you encounter a lot of random kindness on the road.
You do. And I have to say, that's a big thing about traveling in general. It really kind of reinstills in me the idea that, you know, essentially people are good. You know, we hear about stories about, you know, things that can go wrong. But, you know, 99% of my experiences have been like amazing. The kindness of strangers, and really people wanting to help you out, or if they might see you looking at a map, they'll come around and say, like, hey, I can help you find something. They want to help you see the best of their place.
Well, I was going to ask you, I'm glad you brought that up. Are there moments where it is incredibly difficult and where you are alone in your hotel room crying? I mean, where you do kind of hit bottom, and maybe you should expect some of those moments.
Yeah, I think it depends on like how short or long your trip is. Like, I think when you go out for a couple weeks, it's probably, you may not encounter that as much. But I found like when I was traveling for like 4 months, that was like a longer time. And a lot of that was in like France and Spain and, you know, countries in Italy where the English isn't the first language. And I was organizing all this and it was just getting tiring, you know, because I agree with that caller, you know, understanding the local language. So I'd taken like a 10-week French course before I went over there, and I knew Spanish. So, but just it's mentally kind of fatiguing to be speaking in another language all the time. So I remember I was up in France, and I was kind of like a little lonely, and I was up in the Normandy area in a town called Bayeux, and I checked into a hostel, and there's these two girls in the room with me, and I just kind of unloaded to them. It's like, oh, I've kind of had a rough, you know, few days here. I'm feeling a little lonely. Like, well, come on out with us. We got some friends, and there's a local apple brandy up there called Calvados. So like, we're all going out for that. So I'm like, okay, I'll come along. Met some great people, and the next day they're doing a day trip down to Mont Saint-Michel, and they asked me to come along. And so it's just kind of like, you know, share your stories with other travelers. They want to help you out, you know. And so they saw me like, come out with us. And so that really kind of turned the page for me in terms of opening up a better chapter for the next 2 months of my travel journey, which happened to be the time that I met my nice Irish husband.
So part of it is really trying to connect with other people.
Yeah,
expecting
yeah.
some of those dark moments, but maybe some of the ways you can get over those is by reaching out to people who are near you.
Yeah, reaching out. And also one thing I found really good is keeping a journal. You know, I tell you, writing when you're traveling abroad, especially if you're a solo traveler, it's kind of a way of getting your head out onto paper, because you may not always have people to talk to, but it's kind of a way just to kind of process things and get a sense, get in touch with yourself and figure out, where am I at right now in this journey? You know, it could be in lots of different ways, emotionally, physically, spiritually, whatever that is. But writing is really a helpful thing to do while you're traveling.
And another phone call here. Let's go to Deborah joining us from Madison. Hi, Deborah.
Hello. Thanks for the show, and thanks for some of these great tips you're giving us. I enjoy traveling alone. I like to travel the way the middle class of the country travels. You meet different people than you would in five-star hotels and have different experiences. And in some ways, it's a little safer because people aren't looking to take advantage of, you know, the person coming out of the five-star hotel. But I want to point out, it's so different traveling as a 50-year-old than it was in 20s and 30s. People love seeing Americans. A lot of times there aren't that many Americans traveling, but and people are just, you know, just as the author said, very kind, very helpful, but their motives are a lot different as a 50-year-old, and I'm meeting more people that I enjoy meeting. It's more relaxed for me traveling now than as a younger person.
Can I ask you, Deborah, how do you mean that their motives are different now?
Well, they're more help. You know, a 20-year-old traveling alone in another country, and most of my travels were in Latin America, would attract a lot of attention from men. And now, you know, people are also very helpful, but it's more to be helpful to meet you. You know, and you get good conversations. It does, you know, as Barbara said, it really helps to have a language. And but there are places you can go where they speak English, and that's fine. I also recommend the Lonely Planet site as a place to go and just find out something, some of the off-the-beaten-track kinds of places and some of the safety things. And the State Department site is just plain scary. You will never leave the country if you...
That's very true. That's very true.
So thank you for the show.
All right. Thank you so much, Deborah.
Yeah, I think, you know, she brought up a really good point about, like, travel resources. You know, in terms of, like, planning for a trip, getting a Lonely Planet book or a rough guide or even like a Let's Go, they usually provide a really good overview of an area or country. You can kind of learn about local customs. You can kind of get an orientation to a city or where you're going to. And that's a really key component to being a successful solo traveler, is doing your homework. You know, because half the fun is the adventure as well, but you want to feel confident in what you're walking into. And that helps keep you safer. And there are, I like to buy a book. I'm still pro book. And obviously, the internet has loads and loads of resources. There's even on Twitter, there's focus talks on Twitter. There's one called Traveler's Night In, which is always a conversation about different travel topics. That's on Thursdays at 2:30. There's one called Travel Talk on Tuesdays. That's at 4:30. So it's like a way to meet other travelers through the social media world. And there's even two websites that I've learned of. One's called journeywoman.com. And that's all about travel resources for women traveling abroad or locally. And then there's another one called womenwelcomewomen.com, which is you can connect with women in other cities, and they might just give you a city tour. They might meet you out for coffees. They may have a spare room. So there's just lots of different resources out there.
That's really interesting. We'll be sure to post some of those on our Facebook page after this hour, so you can check for those there if you want to get some more scoop on those resources that Carolyn was mentioning. And I want to read an email now. This is, we don't know who it's from, but it says, I've always heard the Irish are very warm and giving to tourists. Did you find this, and are you accepted as an American living and in the business in Ireland now?
Oh, yeah. Well, I have to say, you know, Ireland, you know, before I had gone there, I'd heard it was a lovely place and the people were very welcoming. And, you know, having married an Irishman now, I definitely can say this is 100% true. Irish people really love meeting people from other countries and hearing their stories. They're very welcoming. And they're very welcoming to me as well, you know, having married a boy from Dublin. And it's a great way to kind of live your passion. You know, we're running our business where we can take people to what Deborah was mentioning, saying like more how the middle class travels, but we stay in like smaller towns and locally owned B&Bs and guest houses. So you kind of have that more authentic, almost as if you're traveling by yourself, but it's in a small tour group of 14 or less. So it's a really nice way to see the country and get connected with the locals, which to me always makes a great travel experience wherever you are in the world.
I'm curious about something that I think it was Deborah had said about how people love to see Americans abroad and that there aren't that many of them. That's kind of exactly the opposite of what I thought. I thought that people were not that thrilled to see Americans, you know, depending on what's going on politically in America, and that, you know, we were overrunning places.
Yeah, I think it kind of depends, again, like the style of travel that you're doing. I think oftentimes when there's like maybe a giant tour bus that are all hordes of tourists are descending upon a site, you know, maybe the locals might see that as just like, oh, another group coming through or whatever. But when you're maybe traveling alone or in a smaller tour group, it's kind of a more respectful way. And they kind of like admire your independence for that. And it's because it's different. They're kind of like, oh, you know, it's great that you're here. Or that if you kind of get off the beaten track, you get away from the main tour. Because in every country, there's kind of a tourist route that a lot of people and sites that you do, which are great to see. But then it's also getting off that beaten track to kind of get into those more local places. And that's what I like to do when I travel, too, traveling abroad. It's like, get to those smaller towns and just get a feel for what it's like to be like a French person living in Provence for a few days or something like that.
Hmm. Let's go to another phone call. Kate, joining us from Madison. Hi, Kate.
Hi there. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I was talking about, I'm 24. When I was in college, I was a big homebody and had a hard time at college. And I decided to take, through my school, I grew up in Minnesota and decided to travel out for 3 months to D.C., and it was my first time flying by myself and being by myself, and it really taught me that I can live as an independent adult away from my parents and away from that, and through that, I got enough courage to move to Madison and find my jobs, and so travel to me by myself has really been a life-opening experience of I can be away from my small town in Minnesota and live out in Madison and do my own thing. And so I think travel is a really great resource for a lot of people to use.
Thank you, Kate.
Yeah.
It sounds like that's what you experienced, right, Carolyn?
Yeah, it's really, it has such a broader effect on your life. You know, you're meeting people that you wouldn't otherwise meet. You're having experiences that you otherwise wouldn't have. You're seeing different cultures. You're trying different foods. You know, it's really, I think it really encourages you to kind of have a more open mind. Like, I was thinking, you know, when I did this rafting trip through the Colorado River and the Grand Canyon, there was like four couples and me and three solo guy travelers. So I was kind of feeling cool as being this, you know, girl solo traveler. And of the three guys, one was from Germany, one was from Ireland, and one was a harbor sea captain from Rhode Island. Kind of had the standard fisherman's look, you know, the white beard. He was in his mid-50s, I'd say. And, you know, I have to say, I probably had an idea in my head of like what this guy is like. But he found out that I had never camped before. I'd never been on a raft before. So he kind of took me under his wing and kind of showed me the ropes and like how to prep for each day. But then when we came into camp each night, he loved to do charcoal sketches as the sun was setting over the Grand Canyon when people were often doing hikes or having a beer or something. And it just really makes you realize that you never want to judge a book by its cover. You always just want to kind of give people a chance to and see what's their story, why are they here? And everyone's got a story, and it's really fun to hear those stories.
We are talking this hour with Carolyn Jeanette, co-owner of Inroads Ireland Tours. She has traveled to 31 countries, 16 of those by herself. And we're looking forward to hearing from more of you this morning, telling us your story about traveling by yourself. If you've done it, what did you like about it, and what did you find challenging? And if you haven't traveled alone, what's stopping you? Our number is 1-800-642-1234. That's 1-800-642-1234, and our email is talk@wpr.org. I'm Veronica Rickert, and this is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Veronica Rickert back with you this morning on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio as we talk about the rewards of solo travel with our guest, Carolyn Jeanette. She is co-owner of Inroads Ireland Tours, and she has traveled to 16 countries on her own and 5 of the 7 continents as well. And Carolyn, we haven't talked about a place that you did find a bit daunting, and that's Thailand. As you'd planned to travel there on your own, this is a place that threw you a little.
It did, because it's such a different culture. You know, everything just feels and smells and so different. And I think what I've learned is that you can also, you know, you can play games in your own head. Like, for some reason, I had in my head that I am the first ever English-speaking tourist to ever go to Bangkok. You know, I just kind of lost my perspective that, you know, a lot of people do this every single day. And I was really nervous about getting from, like, the airport to my accommodation. And it's a giant airport. They have taxis, you know. And for some reason, you can just kind of make yourself silly about things like that. But it's those, I remember those fluttery feelings now. And so I really empathize with travelers if you're feeling a little nervous about travel. And just, you know, always just take a slow, deep breath and think, I can do this. I'm not the first person to go to this country on my own. And I can do this, and I can do this safely. And, you know, one thing about, like, coming into countries that I found, like, in terms of being safe as a female traveler, is I always plan that my trains or my buses or planes arrive during daylight or early evening hours, or that I have plenty of time to get from my arrival point to my accommodation in good daylight hours.
So you don't want to get into Bangkok at 3 in the morning.
Right. You know, and if it's going to cost me $100 extra to get a flight that comes in at 1 o'clock in the afternoon, that's money well spent, because it's just going to add more stress. You're just opening the door to any potential stuff that could happen. I mean, probably it's not, but why even create that for yourself? Why add that extra layer of stress onto things? And then the thing about Bangkok too, I got to my accommodation, which is kind of a locally owned guest house, and it was like 100 degrees in Bangkok, and it was 100% humidity, and all there was one ceiling fan. I was just like, I am just miserable. I am just really, really uncomfortable here. So I just, you know, got up the next morning, and I walked like a few blocks, and there was like a locally owned hotel for like $20 US a night that had full air conditioning. I'm like, you know, you have to be able to, you know, again, listen to your own travel meter, and don't be so hard and set in stone, like, I have to do this local guest house experience. It's like, no, I'm going to that hotel where it's going to be a lot more comfortable. And they had a nice restaurant, and I was just, oh, just so, so thankful that I, you know, knew to say, just, you know, let that go and try somewhere different.
good advice on listening to your gut again.
Yeah, I tell you.
Listening to the air conditioning unit in that case. Sounds a lot like Wisconsin this summer. Let's go to Greg. Greg is joining us next from Milwaukee. Hi, Greg.
Hi. I wanted to say, I've hitchhiked all of the United States back in the 70s, and I never had any problem whatsoever. In fact, I had 2 notebooks full of people's phone numbers. I tell people, you want to sign my journal here, and they put their phone numbers down, they put their addresses down, they told me, if you're ever in the city, come by and visit us. And I had a great time. It was fantastic. But just recently, I was living up north. In 2005, I quit driving. I decided, I'm watching all the species of insects and frogs and everything just disappearing. And so I thought, well, I don't want to contribute to it. So I stopped driving, and I live 22 miles from home, from work. And I started walking to work and hitchhiking. And the only people who would give me rides were the sheriffs. They'd give me a ride all the way to work. But I moved back to Milwaukee because it became too much of a problem to survive up there out in the woods, especially in winter.
Right. Well, so lots of different coping mechanisms there. I don't know about hitchhiking, though. That's probably not one you recommend for women traveling alone.
Yeah, you know, I've never done that. My husband Phyllis told me that hitchhiking, even for women in Ireland, is kind of considered okay. You know, for me, it's just not what I would choose to do, you know. I mean, maybe two girls, I think, traveling together, you probably have a safer, you know, situation. But for myself, I've never done it. I've never hitchhiked.
Are you still in touch with the people that you've met on these travels? You know, Greg had his notebook of phone numbers. Do you have contacts?
I do. And, you know, it's great how, like, one thing can lead to another. For example, like, I was in Montreal, and this is, like, one of those one thing connects to another stories. I had been in Greece and had met a Canadian girl from Toronto, and I was living in Milwaukee then, so I figured Milwaukee to Toronto, that's pretty easy. So I went over there to visit her, but then I wanted to see Montreal and Quebec City, so I went up there and stayed at hostels. But then I met this girl, Simone, from Australia in my hostel room, who I'm still in touch with today, like, you know, at least 10 years later. You know, she's gotten married, she has a baby, but we're still friends, and we actually visited her in Sydney.
Ah.
And her parents were originally from the Netherlands, and she was going over in that summer to visit family and friends. So we ended up meeting in the Netherlands like 6 months later, and she took me around the Netherlands for like 10 days.
Ah, so connections pay off.
Connections pay off, and I got definitely that more local experience. Hmm. I met a guy from Scotland. He took me to a Cayleaf to celebrate his parents' wedding anniversary. I mean, travelers are very welcoming people. They love to show you. If you're in their part of the world, they can't wait to show you a good time there.
Well, thank you for that call, Greg. And next we go to Jane, joining us from Fitchburg. Hi, Jane.
Hi. I'm a 66-year-old lady, and during my 50s and 60s, I did a little bit of traveling by myself within the U.S., and partly because I was a teacher, and so I had my summers off, and a lot of my friends didn't. And I could just get in the car tonight or tomorrow or whenever and go wherever I wanted to go. And I have some dogs, huskies, so they're not real small dogs, but I was really surprised at how many hotels will not mind if you have dogs. Hmm. I've stayed at Holiday Inns and at Best Western and just a lot of places like that. And they even have yards where they say, well, here's where you can walk your dog, you know, as long as you pick up after yourself. So I have found that traveling with my dog or dogs is a real, gave me a feeling of having a companion along on the trip and having a little bit more security. But and not really a problem, except, of course, you wouldn't do it in the summer heat. Mm-hmm. One other thing about traveling by myself is, with some people you could do this as well, but some wouldn't be as open to just stopping wherever. So on one trip, I visited a trip to Texas on my way home. I visited my childhood home in Kansas, and I visited on my way out to Montana. I visited John Wayne's house, and I stopped at the bridges of Madison County, and I found a really nice wild animal park in Nebraska, a drive-through park where you would see buffalo and elk and all different kinds of animals that you would just drive by and stop and take pictures and things. And those would be things that I had never had the time to do when I was traveling with other people.
Right. Well, you're talking about, I guess, getting to set your own agenda, which would be a wonderful luxury when you're traveling. Sometimes just be able to follow your own heart and interests instead of being on someone else's clock.
Exactly. And I think that's one of the best things is that you can pursue those interests. It's kind of like, you know, the idea of, like, follow your dream, follow that passion. Like, don't let the fact that someone else can't come along with you stop you. You can do this. It's such a great experience to do.
Do you think that traveling alone is something that everyone should try at least once? Is it one of those things that you really need to cross off your bucket list?
Well, you know, I have to say I'm very biased, you know. But I really think if there's something, it's kind of like a greater theme in life. If there's something that you want to do, try your best to make it happen. You know, whether that's a trip or a new hobby or taking a class. You know, don't let little blips in the road stop you. If you wanted it, make it a goal to make it happen. And I would agree, even just like going out to dinner with yourself, you know, and yeah, I like to say that, you know, versus by yourself. I think, you know, think of traveling with yourself, you know, that you are a good travel companion with yourself. And that's why kind of like writing, I think, or some people like to meditate. Those are good ways to kind of get in touch with yourself. And you may come back a stronger person, a more in touch with yourself kind of person. And that's just greater for your own personal development over time.
You know what? I really like that, being with yourself instead of by yourself.
Yeah.
Did you come up with that?
I don't know. I would like to say I did, but I think I probably read it somewhere.
Okay, let's go to another caller. Linda with us from Egg Harbor. Hi, Linda.
Hi. I would just like to make the comment that I totally agree with your guest that getting one of the books, like The Lonely Planet, Rick Steves or Fedora's, is most helpful. It tells you about the customs and the tipping and medical emergencies and phone numbers, but there's difference in the books. Lonely Planet, in my opinion, would be for a college student that wants to stay at youth hostels. They're going to recommend inexpensive hotels and places. Rick Steves, a little bit more high-end, and Fedora's a little bit more higher-end. So depending on your budget, I would definitely recommend the Fedora's or the Rick Steves. We did have the Lonely Planet, and I said to my husband, I said, we're way too old for this one. So, but huge, great information on all of the books.
Okay. Thank you, Linda.
Yeah, I think that's a really good point. I mean, there's lots of different travel resources out there, and to find the one that matches your travel style. I mean, we all have our own, what we like to do for a particular trip. I was going to mention one other one called The Rough Guide, which is kind of like a little bit between a Lonely Planet and a Fodor's. They have kind of like what we call like more the cheap and cheerful accommodation. It might be a hostel or B&B, but they do have like more some like if you want to splash out for like a 4 or 5 star Comic-Con, they mention places like that as well.
Okay, so different take there on the travel. Let's get Lita from Toma next. Hi, Lita.
Yes, hello. I'm enjoying the program very much.
Thank you.
Because I've traveled by myself. I happen to be in the 70s and have white hair, and sometimes that's an advantage because people are willing to help you move your luggage or whatever. I do have two pieces of advice I follow, and this is to follow up a comment from your guest speaker. I always stop when I'm driving my car. I always stop at 6 o'clock at night, no later, so that I have a place to stay and I'm not driving after dark. And I always carry food with me, although I do like to eat in the local cafes, but I carry food in case, for example, I followed the Lewis and Clark Trail into Iowa, and because I had a picnic lunch in my car, I stopped on the banks of the Missouri River and pretended I was part of the expedition for just a few minutes, which was a great experience. I have driven in Iowa on the Lewis and Clark Trail. I have driven across the country from Toma to Twist, Washington, a tourist town where my daughter was performing in summer stock, and that was a 4.5 day trip. And then I flew by myself to Skagway, Alaska, and I spent a month there working at a youth hostel for my room and board. And then I came back home at the end of the month. An advantage to driving, I found, is that I can play any radio station I want, and I can have the heater on or the air conditioning on any temperature I want. And I find myself fiddling with those knobs a lot. So I feel that I'm probably not the best person to travel with. So it's a good thing that I like to travel by myself. thank you for the program.
Well, thank you, Lita. It sounds like she's been all over the place.
And
lots of people who enjoy the car travels by themselves.
Yeah, I have to say, I love doing a road trip by with myself. and then she brought up a really good point about having some food with you. Because like whether you're like in a car or you're traveling between cities, it's helpful to I would always have an apple. Some like those little cheeses that were self-contained, a little wax unit. And some water and some crackers. So if all else fails and I'm coming into a place for some reason there's not food available, I always had like a little stockpile of things. But it also opens up the opportunity, like you said, like to do a picnic along, you know, the Lewis and Clark Trail. And car travels are really great fun too, because there's lots of like great little wacky places to stop along the way and have a chat with a local, maybe grab a beer or something.
I think we have time for one more phone call before the hour ends. Jennifer joining us from Duluth, Minnesota. Hi, Jennifer.
Hi, I'm really enjoying the conversation. I just recently got into traveling on my own right after graduating college, and I found a lot of confidence from it. And I think that going off to college on my own to cities far away from home without knowing anyone really kind of started this kick in me. And when I went on a two-week trip after I graduated, 1 week in San Francisco and 1 week in New York City, which was just awesome. It was a whirlwind. And I I spent my time there with friends. And what made traveling hard for me, or like an even more exciting adventure for me, is the food. And you've mentioned food a lot. I recently was diagnosed with celiac disease, so I have to eat gluten-free.
Hmm.
A lot of consideration has to go into that. And at the time, I didn't have an iPhone, and I couldn't just look up restaurant menus, and I didn't know the area, so I just had to trust the people I was traveling with, and when they couldn't do it, we just kept walking, and we just talked to people. And one of your comments earlier was just the goodness of people in our world, and that's what I found on this trip. I went with no plans whatsoever. I just decided I had, like, some ideas of things I really wanted to see and do, but I really made no plans, and I ended up getting to do all of them and more. And
I'm sorry, we have to leave it there. We're about out of time. And Carolyn, real quick, maybe 5 seconds for a comment.
Oh, go out there and explore your world. You know, it's a great way to, you know, learn more about yourself, see the world, have new experiences, and meet some great people on the way.
Well, Carolyn, thank you so much for joining us. It's been a lot of fun.
Thank you.
Carolyn, the co-owner of Carolyn Jeanette, I should say, the co-owner of Inroads Ireland Tours. She has been to 16 countries by herself. Thanks to Chrissy Pease and Ronna Fanning for production. I'm Veronica Rickert on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.